Well, Paul Bell, the Health Divisional Organiser with SIPTU, and Gerard Howland, Public Affairs Consultant and Irish Examiner columnist, are with me now in studio to talk about this in a little more detail. Gerard, I might start with you. I know you were writing about this issue yesterday. Pay equality. No one could have a problem with equality, could they?
Absolutely not. Equality is lovely, except the use of the word equality in this context is absolutely wrong. It's not about equality. It's about a leg up. There was a report published by the Department of Finance last Friday which set this out. And there's a convoluted history to this. It goes back to fairly swinging pay cuts in by the Fianna Fáil Green government in 2010, implemented, I think, from the beginning of 2011. And that included a 10% cut for all new entrants thereafter. In Haddington Road agreement 2 years later, that was recalibrated so that all new entrants started at the very bottom of the scale, not at 0.3 as they would have had historically, which means going forward, separate from, but in addition to, very significantly less advantageous pension arrangements for people who join post 2013, that people who are joining the public service now, starting at the bottom point, are on the exact same pay scale, but it's a longer trajectory for them to the top. And that's where the equal pay for equal money comes in. I don't believe it accurately describes the issue at all. Interestingly, if you take a person's package over their lifetime, given the length of time these younger people are likely to live, I think it's inarguable that the pension actually has a changes has a far more going to have a far bigger impact on them eventually, but it's the pay bit that they see now in their pocket today, so that's where the focus is. And of course it causes acute problems for the trade unions, because when this was, and they will insist it was never agreed to by them, and technically they're right, it was a government fiat, a government decision that imposed this, but if it wasn't agreed to, it was acquiesced in effectively. And there's no other interpretation that I think on that is credible.
Paul, I'll ask you about that in a moment. The idea that, I suppose, incumbents, trade unions, members sold out those coming behind them or pulled the ladder up. But what about that argument that this isn't about restoration of equality, it's about restoration of a leg up?
Well, I considered Gerard's article last week in the Examiner, and there are huge gaps in that particular narrative, because at the end of the day, air members endured emergency legislation, which meant that certain actions were taken at the time to cut back on salary, to indeed encourage people to leave the public service where it was needed. At the same time, more and more demands were being made on the public service, whether it was health, education, whether it was local authorities. Some things that maybe were taken for granted until the last number of weeks, when we've seen people in the public service, in the military, as Paul has referred to, the lowest paid public servants, were asking people to sign on to the Army, the Navy and the Air Force for €20,000 a year. Yes, in the last number of weeks, we needed their services in the red alert weather warning. Last night, we seen members of Dublin Fire Brigade.
But they were there. Like, when we needed them, they were there. My point is, like, 60,000 people signed up to these terms. Well, it couldn't be that bad.
Well, absolutely. People sign up things when they are pressurised to do so. But can I just make the point? Public servants are entitled to equity in their pay structure, if not equality. And that's what they're entitled to. And I think when we talk about these people, like, we don't seem to understand the kind of monies that they've been asked to sign up to. We've got nursing staff starting off at €25,000, healthcare assistants, €25,000. Those kind of figures. Paramedics, the people if we fall in the street, if we have a cardiac arrest, that we want to come take care of us, are starting off on those wages. And then what's happening is you have a group of people before that who basically are on a different pay system. We have a two-tier pay system in the public service. That's what we have.
Gerard is shaking his head here now. His
argument was, Gerard's on a public service, with all due respect to him, and if I looked at the narrative that Gerard propagates, I'm saying quite simply that there are a two-tier pay system. The government recognised that there's an injustice, and that's why they've engaged the report, and that's why they're going to engage in a discussion and a negotiation. And that's where we are right now.
Gerard, what about...
I've read the report cover to cover.
Okay.
It doesn't recognise, as Paul says in those terms, that there's an injustice. It makes the points that across the public service generally, apart perhaps from some specifics, there hasn't been a recruitment problem, which tells its own story. People have voted with their feet to join the public service, 60,500 of them, on these terms and conditions, more and more every year.
There are vacancies, though. Paul mentioned there are people also voting
with their feet and leaving the public service in critical areas of healthcare and education. Many of our school teachers are going to the United Kingdom. Many of our medical professionals are leaving to go to the United States and Canada. And we've got to get real with this situation. And one of the issues that's really creeping into this is this pay inequity, pay inequality. And the reason the government want to get into that conversation...
It's not hospital working conditions, it's just pay.
But they know, because you don't forget, you do not have enough people. And the investment in recruiting people over the last number of years has also been questionable.
If you say the word often enough, I suppose eventually you come to believe it. But if you examine the facts thoroughly enough, there's no basis for it.
Whether you call it then a leg up or equality, what's the problem then with bumping people back up to 0.3 on the scale if it means that we can retain teachers and nurses where there is shortages?
Well, first of all, in relation to health workers specifically, there was a very good report last week about losing health workers across the European Union. And this is not an Irish problem. All sorts of countries, except a few, including the Nordics, have this problem. And some of them have it to a much greater extent than we have. There is an increasing worldwide shortage, coupled with ageing in the Western world, of people whose skills are ever more in demand. And this is just one subset of that much bigger issue. We need many, many more medical people in every discipline, sort and type, going forward, and they have a scarce skill that's in short supply. So that's the underlying.
So it's not the point then. We're competing then with other health services across Europe.
So you're defeating your own argument, Gerard.
No, I'm
illustrating it, because if you pick out that just one sector and you ignore the fact that this will cost 200 million a year every year into the baseline of public spending before another Band-Aid is bought in a hospital, before a stick of chalk can be bought for a school. You're going back to the noughties, to social partnership as it was then, to the mistake of public service pay chasing house prices or rent prices as they would be now for the reality of the lives of most of these young public servants. And that turned out to be a disastrous mistake, because there is an alternative. There is an alternative to say that money, and here I would agree with the trade unions, or the mainstream of the trade unions at least, that shouldn't be given away in tax cuts. It shouldn't be frittered away in pay increases for the privileged within a public service. It should be invested in our infrastructure, including our houses, to give us the stronger economy that we're going to be more productive for all going forward. Because Paul said, well, I'm not a public servant. You're right, but people outside the public service don't have pay scales, don't have increments, don't have any hope of ever any sort of a defined benefit scheme, and there are a lot, and they certainly do not have the prospect of job security.
Paul,
so these are facts.
A final word on this.
A final word. I think I've entitled more than one word in relation to that. Firstly, over the period of time that Gerald was referring to, in the private sector, there were actually pay increases for organisations that could actually pay them, ranging between 1.5% and 2%. We have public servants now on low pay, depending on family income.
Not universal now.
I didn't say it's universal. Like, if we're going to be selective now, I didn't say it was universal.
You're comparing universal issues when it comes to public service with specific examples.
We have
plenty of places that pay cuts, including here. Plenty of people lost their jobs, including here.
I think we all enjoyed pay cuts over that period of time. There's no one shy of it. The fact of life is that we want public servants, and we want the very best of them. We cannot turn around and say that those people should be now working poor. We don't accept it in the private sector. We shouldn't accept it in the public sector. The fact is also that we have people now in the public service cannot participate in their own local economy. They can't buy a house. They can't buy transport. They're lucky enough to be able to put money into food on the table. That point is well made. And these are people that we are depending on every day.
All right. Look, on that note, we could stay talking about it all morning. Gerard Howland, Public Affairs Consultant and Irish Examiner columnist, and Paul Bell, the Health Divisional Organiser with SIPTU. Thanks both of you very much for coming into studio this morning.